Hello everybody and welcome to the Last Word on Tennis podcast. We have an exciting pod ahead of us. We've got a multitude of amazing tennis minds that I've brought together for this debate podcast that was my own brainchild. So we've got four guests across the world. We've got Damien, who most of you will be familiar with, Damien Kust from Poland. We've got Rob Heath back for his second consecutive pod. All the way from the UK. We've got Ryan Schick from the States and also Amy Lundy from the States. Now, three of those people have been on the pod before. We've got one debutante, though. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how's it going?
Thank you. We'll skirt over the fact that I completely got the wrong time for your time zone.
That's okay.
If you want to introduce yourself briefly to the listeners and kind of what you've been doing in tennis for the last however long.
Yeah, I'm a longtime journalist, and I do some writing here in the States for ESPN.com, a website called 538.com. I write about tennis for them. But I love writing for Last Word on Tennis because there's good editors to really look at your stuff. And you have the freedom to write whatever you want. So I really enjoy it. But most of the stuff that I write revolves around data.
Yeah, that's a thing close to my heart as well. So really worth always checking out Amy's pieces on Last Word on Tennis. They're always worth the read and provoke some thoughts that you might not have considered before. So welcome to the podcast. I hope you enjoy your first experience here. We're going to introduce everybody now with a little question, which I always like to start with a random question. So obviously, we know there's no live tennis at the moment. So the question to the guys is, and we'll start with Damien, what new thing have you done since tennis was stripped from your life? And Damien, as we all know, your life revolves around tennis. So come on, what have you done to fill the gaps?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to talk about tennis again because that's the only thing that comes to mind. I started playing with a tennis ball each day, which I actually have never done. I think I saw how out of shape I was getting and I decided that I have to do something about it. So for the past 4 days, I've been getting up at 6 a.m. and going to a tennis wall in the neighborhood. And I'm enjoying this a lot and probably going to do this, for as long as the lockdown is with us.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is the thing about the lockdown. It's obviously a horrible thing that's happening across the world, but is giving people a chance to kind of reflect on what they do and maybe things that people have picked up they'll carry on into the post-lockdown situation. Rob, have you picked anything up?
I'm expanding my cooking repertoire. I love cooking anyway, but I'm currently working my way through the Rose's Thai Cafe, which is a chain of Thai restaurants in London. I think there's one in Manchester as well. Their cookbook, which I bought for my partner a couple of Christmases ago, which is very much like the Homer Simpson bowling ball of presents, because it was for me, really.
Yeah.
Working my way through that book. There's some great recipes in there. I can recommend it.
No, there you go. A food recommendation as well. You get everything on the Last Word in Tennis podcast. Ryan, what have you been up to since tennis was cruelly taken away from us?
Yeah, I mean nothing crazy too new, but I've been working really hard. And I'm an engineer, so I don't work in tennis. But I've been trying to read a lot more recently, and so I started and finished 4 books in the month of March, and I don't think I've come close to that in any month in my life. So that's been my big thing, is just kind of doing a lot of reading.
Any books you can recommend to the people out there? We've got a cookbook recommendation already. So
actually one I just finished a few weeks ago. I read John McEnroe's autobiography titled
You
Cannot Be Serious. And I'd highly recommend it. He's very, it's very McEnroe. He's very honest. He doesn't shy away from anything he did. And there's some really interesting insight on both his career and just kind of the tennis world at the time and kind of the things you deal with that most of us wouldn't think about. So I definitely give that one a recommendation.
I wonder if we'll be talking about Super Brat later in the show. Amy, tell us something.
Well, I am a tennis player. And I was, before this, I was playing 4 or 5 days a week, and you just can't do that anymore. So since all that has been taken away, I mentioned that I really like data, and I have been obsessed with the COVID-19 data. I mean, I get up [S2] Right. [S1] In the morning and I read pretty much everything I can. And just the past week, I've been obsessed with the vaccine and the clinical trials that are going on around the world in the sort of arms race to find a vaccine. So that's kind of my new hobby.
Oh, right. Okay. So you're the expert then on the, on the staff. Right. So when we do, when we end up doing a podcast about COVID-19, then I'm going to get you back on. Right. Let's talk about what we're kind of here all together for. We've come up with the idea of doing the ultimate Laver Cup teams, right? So obviously the Laver Cup, a tournament that's been in the tennis calendar for the last 3 years. It was brought to us by Roger Federer's management team, teammate, and a Brazilian former Davis Cup player who's involved, Jorge Paulo Lehmann, and Tennis Australia. So they've all come together, created the Laver Cup, obviously named after the great Rod Laver, and kind of liked the idea of what they saw in the Ryder Cup in golf. So we brought together the best of the Europeans and the best of the rest of the world, although obviously it's just the States in Ryder Cup. The matches are spread throughout 3 days, with points being given out for victories in the matches. 9 singles matches and 3 doubles matches make up the points, and the points are increased throughout the day. So the matches on the third day are worth 3 points, I think, and in the middle day it's 2 points. So they kind of ratchet up the tension as it goes, what's meant to anyway. There was a little bit of tension in the last one in 2019. I think that went to the deciding match, did it? Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong there. But Team Europe have won all 3 Laver Cups that they've been so far. The quiz question that I've got for you guys, which we'll come back to right at the end in terms of for the answers, is who are the top 9 Laver Cup point scorers? Now, top 9 might seem a random number, but there's a very good reason for top 9, which we'll come to when we do the answers. So you guys, at the back of your minds, obviously whilst you're debating who's going to make your ultimate Laver Cup team, that's the question I'm going to be asking at the end. Who are the top 9 Laver Cup point scorers? And we'll see how we get on with that. You guys at home as well, feel free to think about that now. And obviously as you're listening to the debate, then have that ruminating in the back of your mind, see if you can get all 9. So let's move on to the actual debate itself. Obviously, I will preface this by saying that comparing tennis players across eras is A, very difficult, and B, probably quite foolhardy. It's the game has changed so much over, obviously, since the Open era, and even we're talking about the whole of tennis history in these teams. So even before that, it's almost an unrecognizable sport to what it is now. But we're going to try and like tackle those things as we go and see who we end up with on the 6 strong teams. So Team Europe will get 6 players. Team rest of the world will get 6 players. Obviously, Damien and Rob, as the Europeans, will be mainly in charge of the European team. And then Amy and Ryan will be kind of picking for the rest of the world team. At any point, guys, if you have something to say on the debate that's happening, even if it's not in Europe and you're from the rest of the world or vice versa, then please feel free to chip in with opinions. But I'll start with speaking to Damien first. What factors did you consider when you were making your selections for who you think should be in the European team?
Well, first of all, I actually decided to stick with the Open era. Pretty much because before that, we don't really have much footage of the players. You know, guys like Laver, Borg, or Rose, well, we can find a lot of videos on the net, but not really that much about Tilden or anyone else. But yeah, and since we're going to be comparing all-time greats against other all-time greats, then I took a look at the head-to-head records between former world number ones. Also, all the previous editions of the Laver Cup were held in indoor venues, so I also kind of looked at how well the possible candidates did at such surfaces, so either on carpet or an indoor hard. And as it's a team-based competition, an important aspect for me was that, you know, how did the player perform in such events? So the Davis Cup, World Team Cup, Laver Cup also, and anything else that can be put into that category.
Okay, so quite a few things then kind of fed into that. I did forget to say that, yes, the Laver Cup has always been played in a kind of an indoor hard surface, and they alternate it between Europe and the rest of the world, which made it difficult for me to try and find a neutral venue for this. So I'm suggesting kind of the moon, an indoor gravity-controlled moon arena of some kind. But basically, the surface will be indoor hard, and it doesn't really matter necessarily where it is. Home advantage certainly hasn't seemed to help the rest of the world out so far in this short-lived competition. Amy, did you consider the kind of exhibition nature of the Laver Cup? Did you lean more towards your entertaining sort of players, or did you not really consider that too much?
All the things that I thought I was going to consider going into this didn't really end up mattering, because the players that I chose are really kind of all-court players. They're mainly from the Open era. And they would give all, they're all, whether it was an exhibition or whether it was for money.
Okay. So, yeah, the creme de la creme. Rob, anything to add on your, was there any, did you maybe look at the double side of things as well as the singles?
Yeah, I think you definitely need a, well, I've gone for one double specialist who's a pretty useful singles player as well. And then single, you know, singles specialists who are good doubles players as well. You know, obviously that's such an important thing, especially if you're making up some makeshift doubles players. The team element is obviously a big thing. Davis Cup performers was quite important for me. And I know Damien mentioned, yeah, players that are good on indoor hard, but also not including players that aren't.
Yeah. So, Ryan, would you kind of go along with that, that the team aspect of it is quite important for you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Rob kind of used two of the things I was going to say. I definitely took doubles into consideration because, you know, a quarter of the matches played are doubles. I didn't include any doubles specialists, but I did throw out, I looked at guys who were very good doubles players as well. The indoor hard, I mean, you never know in a future, and this is obviously all hypothetical, whether it could be played on a clay court or even a grass court, but mostly focused on players who did well in hard, because it makes sense in the nature of the tournament to have it in indoor hard court arenas. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the final thing, I definitely looked pretty heavily on Davis Cup results, because it's, I mean, team competitions is different mentally, playing for your country, or in this case, your continent or the world, but it is just a different competition mentally, and I think you bring something else to that competition. So I did look at those Davis Cup results as well.
Great. So a kind of a vast variety of ways of looking at it, and saw so many different aspects into it. A lot of people maybe would have just looked at it and gone, right, well, I'll just go down the Grand Slam list and count how many Grand Slams people have won and throw them into a team. But I get the feeling it's not really going to work out like that. So let's get into the team selections then and start with Europe. Rob, is there any argument that you found to not include who we consider now to be the big three, Federer, Nadal and Djokovic? Did you think of a reason why you couldn't have all three?
There is, and I kind of hinted at it in my last answer, and this may be where Damien and I clash straight away. But in my team, I've decided to leave out Rafa, which might provide some gasps.
Damien's storing that for an argument in a minute, I can tell. Go on, carry on. Justify yourself.
Purely for his, I mean, obviously his Laver Cup record is good, and obviously, you know, we don't need to sit and discuss his tennis record, full stop. I'm just purely going on indoor hard. And I wanted a bit more of a varied team in terms of eras as well. And for me, he was the easiest of the three to leave out. I mean, I think if you were doing this in all seriousness, there'd probably be a little argument to leave him out. But I don't know. Sometimes I would question his desire to even want to play on an indoor hard court, which, again, might get a few draws of sharp intakes of breath.
Well, let's just bring Damien in then. I've kind of prefaced that question thinking there wasn't going to be maybe a very good enough reason. Have you heard enough there from Rob to think that maybe he's got a point there about Nadal, or have you gone maybe a different way?
I was planning to say that I thought you would definitely find some people who would say that Nadal shouldn't be included. I didn't expect that it would be Rob, but it's fine. I mean, we even have a very controversial piece on the site, I think, which is called Rafael Nadal is not an all-time great on hard courts or something like that.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty outdated at the moment because he won the US Open title last year, but I think if you just change the title to not an all-time great on indoor hard courts, then it could work. I mean, he's got just two indoor titles under his belt, and actually only one of them is on hard. One of them is on clay. His lone indoor hard court title took place 15 years ago in Madrid. But I still decided to go with him because, first of all, the guy is a beast in team-based competitions. He's got the incredible Davis Cup record. Five titles, which some of them he practically carried his team, especially last year at the inaugural Davis Cup finals, which were played on indoor hard, where he just won the competition single-handedly, pretty much. He's been spectacular also in the two Laver Cups that he played, and he really seems to be enjoying being a part of the team. I think it's also a pretty safe assumption that if the indoor season was as important nowadays as it was in the 70s, 80s, Nadal would have more titles of this sort. I mean, in the past 15 years, I checked, and he played just five events besides Madrid, Paris, and the year-end championships on that surface. So I'm pretty positive that if he played more smaller events on indoor hard, then he would have some more titles there. Djokovic and Federer are definitely superior to him indoors. But so I agree that Nadal is the easiest to leave out here, but I would probably still stick with him.
Well, I've actually, sorry, Rob, I've just got the Laver Cup stats in front of me here, and it's interesting to note that all three of it's been going since 2017 until 2019, as we know, and all three of them haven't played the same event yet. So they haven't had a Laver Cup team with the three of them on there. Obviously, Federer's played, it's one of his, it's his love child, so he's played in every event, and he's got an immaculate singles record. Nadal, though, has won two and lost one singles and played three doubles match and only won one of those, so that only leaves him with a 3-3 record. And Novak Djokovic has got a 0-2 record from his one attempt at the Laver Cup, lost his singles match and lost a doubles match. Now, I haven't been a massive follower of the Laver Cup, I have to say, but so I can't tell you who he lost against and in what circumstances. But just off those bare numbers there, then is Djokovic not? And also off of a team, I mean, Rob, you know Djokovic quite well, as we discovered in the last podcast. You've interviewed him like probably coming close to 200 times. Is he a team player?
Yes, I think he is. I think it can be a bit of a misconception that he's not. His Laver Cup record isn't great. One thing I would like to kind of imagine in our fictional version of the Laver Cup is that it's gained some kind of history in this time, and doesn't have the slight novelty that it has at the moment, where it's all still a bit kind of pally, although they all want to win. I'm imagining that our version has gained some kind of Ryder Cup history and distinction, whereby every time they go out there, they really want to beat the other team.
Yeah.
And so therefore, I think Djokovic is a must-have, just because of how difficult to beat he is. Making highlights reels for Djokovic can be a difficult task because, a lot of the times he won't hit many winners, so he can absolutely dominate a match. But if you're just looking for one-off shots and stuff to put in, it can be quite difficult. And that kind of tells the story of just what a grinder he is and how difficult he is to beat.
So we've got
definitely him and Federer for me.
Yeah. So are we going to agree on Nadal? So what I want from you guys is confirming now. Three players who are going to make this team. Well, I think we can all hear that you're going to go with Federer and Djokovic. So I'll let Damien first of all. You've gone with Nadal. Who would you go with, Rob? Just out of interest.
Well, my other choice from that era is Andy Murray for similar reasons to Djokovic. Also, he, I would say is the best doubles player of the four of them. And I think he would pair quite nicely with a couple of the other players I'm thinking about.
I'd be interested to know if Damien even had him in his six at all.
I actually can tell you already that I haven't. I think there's some serious breed bias going on here.
Maybe.
Rob, would you be able to? Would you concede Murray for Nadal?
Yeah, I can concede Murray for Nadal.
Can just put in Murray later, right?
Yeah, you can. We can talk about Murray later.
You know,
yeah.
I have him actually as a candidate for the sixth pick that I mentioned that I wasn't really sure about yet.
Okay, so, cool. Well, okay, it might change your mind once I tell you who he was going to play doubles with. So,
okay. Interested now?
We'll keep that for now. If I can, I'm just going to. If it's okay with you guys, I'm going to lock in Federer, Nadal, Djokovic.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to the rest of the world team. You've heard the debate there, guys. Is there any, like, even people would consider Nadal to be an absolute certainty. I didn't necessarily think that, but Ryan, was there anyone from the rest of the world team who's an absolute certainty for you? We've heard about the travails in the modern day, really struggling to get players even ranked within the top 20 into their team. So going back a little bit, maybe further, was there anyone who stood out to you that was an absolute certainty to make the team?
Yeah, I actually had three, and to your point about the rankings, I was looking at the most recent, the 2019 Laver Cup, and the lowest ranked member of the European team was ranked higher than the top ranked member of the rest of the world team. So that kind of says where tennis is at least right now. But so I felt we had three who were locked in the team. I'm going to start with the tournament's namesake, Rod Laver. I know we did talk. He was obviously fringe Open era, but I mean, there's no argument he's one of the all-time greats. Won two calendar year Grand Slams, one pre-Open era, one in 69 in the Open era. Number one for a very long time, and he also does add value on the doubles side. He won 28 doubles titles, including six slams, and two of those were in the Open era. So I think you can't not include Laver just thinking about his status as an all-time great and where he is in tennis. So he's one that was locked. And then back, you said when I mentioned the McEnroe book that he would come up. I think McEnroe has to be in it. Obviously, his singles record speaks for itself, but he also, I believe it was Peter Fleming who played with him, made some comment that the best doubles team in the world is John McEnroe and whoever he plays with. And there's... Right. He won one more doubles title than he did singles, so you could put him in doubles with anybody, and I think he has to be in it. And I kind of looked at it a little with the entertainment value. Maybe we're looking at it with more prestige in the future, but it is a fun event. It is for entertainment, and who's going to be more entertaining to watch to get people excited about it than having John McEnroe? So I thought block. And then my third lock would be Pete Sampras, because I think before this era, a lot of people would say he's maybe the best singles player of all time. He did have the most Grand Slams of anybody before the big three. And so I think Pete Sampras has to be in it. I think he's the greatest American ever to play. And then I forgot to mention with McEnroe, he has an excellent team competition record, and Sampras as well won two Davis Cups in his day. So I think those three were all I felt as locks for my team.
And so I can certainly, you know, you've made good cases there. I wonder if Amy has kind of thought along similar lines. Do you think Rod Laver was always going to be picked to play in this tournament, Amy? Like, obviously, it bears his name, right? So you can't have a bigger legend than Rod Laver playing for the rest of the world, surely.
I mean, Rod's on my team, and some people consider him to be the greatest tennis player ever, but he wasn't one of my locks. I really wasn't thinking in terms of, you know, him being, I mean, I feel like the reason that it's the Laver Cup is because of Laver's relationship with Federer, and, you know, Roger wanted to do something to honor his friend, and, you know, it's this really great competition, and it's brilliantly executed. But just in terms of if I have to pick a team, my lock would be Sampras for all the reasons that Ryan mentioned. 14 slams, the greatest American player, tremendous server, which helps in those indoor hard conditions. A great mover, great team player. He was my number one. Roy Emerson was my number two. And I realized that a lot of Roy's career was played before the Open era. But to me, he's just one of the greatest players to ever pick up a tennis racket. He's a volleyer. I think he's the one guy, and maybe you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, who won all four slams in both singles and doubles. So great doubles player. And then my third was McEnroe. Also for a lot of the reasons that Ryan mentioned, but also because McEnroe is a lefty. And I think in terms of like a baseball manager where you got to have a lefty on your pitching staff to mix things up and drive other people crazy. And that was why, for me, McEnroe is a lock. And also the entertainment value and the showmanship and all that.
So that does come into it again for you. It's interesting you both picked, obviously, McEnroe as a lock there, because as I said at the start of the podcast, if you were counting up just the top six rest of the world players who'd won the most slams, that doesn't actually include McEnroe. He's down a little bit lower than that. So interesting that you both got him as an actual lock. I guess the debating point between you guys is now going to come between Roy Emerson and Rod Laver, which, you know, they played in the same era. Laver went on a bit longer than Emerson did. So it may well be that Emerson ends up as one of the later picks or Laver does. But I have to ask Ryan, did you have Ryan Emerson in your six at all?
I actually didn't. So I had five kind of solid people, and then I have a collection of players for that sixth spot. And Roy Emerson was one of them, but he was not one of my five. I think a lot of that to do was, you know, not playing in the Open era and not having, there's less to compare. And then on top of that, just the fact that Laver and Emerson were in the same era, and I put Laver above Emerson. Amy did make a good point about the doubles, but I would still feel just like with Laver's status as a greatness, thinking of Aussies from that era, I had to choose Laver between the two. So that was my thinking of having Laver as a lock and Emerson as a maybe.
Would you concede, Amy, that we can put Laver in at this stage and maybe we can fight the battle for Emerson further down the line?
Yes, I will trade putting Laver up front here if we can have Emerson on the team.
It sounds like you're going to have a battle on our hands later on down the line. Let's skip back to Europe then. So we've got so far Federer and Nadal Djokovic. We've kind of skirted over that one. And then we've got Sampras, Laver and McEnroe currently and the rest of the world team. Already sounds like a tournament that I would love to get involved in. But there's plenty of big hitters still sitting on the sidelines at the moment, just waiting to be picked. So let's go back to Damien then. And let's ask the next question. You know, I guess this is the tough part. Who else kind of had strong cases to make the team for you?
A very strong case for me is Ivan Lendl. Let's say that now that we decided for the purpose of this show to stick with Lendl as a Czech, not as
an American. Bring that up to everybody. Is everyone happy to take Lendl as Czechoslovakian rather than American?
Yes, absolutely. Most of his career was under that flag.
Exactly. Right. He only changed he only got American nationality in 92, I think. So all of his Grand Slams were won under the Czech flag, Czechoslovakian actually. And the reason why I wanted to include him so much is, first of all, because he had great head-to-head records with other greats that he could face in this event. He has a positive record against McEnroe, Connors, Agassi too. He actually has a losing record against Sampras, but it's only 8 matches. And he has an amazing indoor pedigree with 42 titles in his career in indoor venues, 8 on indoor hard and 34 on carpet. But that's what the majority of indoor events was played on back in these days. Also, that's a player who certainly wouldn't disappoint you with his consistency. What Rob talked about, about Djokovic, Rob talked that he, you know, it's really hard to make the highlights reels for Djokovic, and the same it was for Lendl. You know, he just was kind of this consistent baseline player, and I'm pretty certain he would be great to make the team because he simply wouldn't go below some level. He also,
so is he, would you consider him to be a team player?
Yes, actually, that's what I was going to talk about now. He immigrated, no worries. He immigrated into the US in 86, and he didn't play in team competitions anymore, as the government of Czechoslovakia called him an illegal defector. But he still managed to win both Davis Cup and the World Team Cup before that for his country. So he definitely shined in such events too. And I think he's a must-have for the European team. So 8 Grand Slams, so that's a very big number.
So, Rob, I happen to know, and so does Damien, when he was making that entire case, that you don't quite fancy Van Lendl quite so much.
I agree with, you know, everything that Damien said. On the face of it, everything makes sense. You know, his record and... you know, his training and everything makes sense to have him in the team. I'm just not sure how much he would enjoy it. And I think about him at the peak of his powers when he's winning the most of his titles was when he was isolating himself more away from the rest of the tour. And I think he kind of softened a bit towards the end of his career in terms of maybe, for want of a better way of saying it, being a more likable person on tour. So I don't know if he'd be up for it.
Interesting. Let's move on to a different, let's just bring it to a different area. There's only two other European players that we've not discussed that are above or equal to Ivan Lendl in terms of Grand Slams won, and that's Bjorn Borg at 11 and Fred Perry at 8. And we talked about different eras. Obviously, Fred Perry is going back to the 1930s and he won his 8 Grand Slams over 3 years. So can we just kind of almost rule him in or out at this stage? Is there any point in even going back to that stage? Did either of you pick Fred Perry?
No. I didn't. No. So no British bias there. I have
can we talk about,
gone.
Can we talk about Bjorn Borg for a minute then instead? Do both of you have Bjorn Borg in your team?
I did have him as my next selection.
You did have him. Damien, why have you got Borg there?
Once again, a fantastic team player. I think his, you know, his career is often undervalued just because how short it is. It was. He retired for the first time. He made that comeback that was, you know, just really not successful. But he retired when he was 26. He won 11 slams by just winning Wimbledon and the French Open. He only played the Australian Open once. Which I think is just an incredible record, you know, to win 11 slams by the age of 26. I'm not positive, but I don't think any of the big three did it, right? So he still has like the best Open era win loss percentage, I think, on any surface. He also won a lot of titles on indoors in his days, so. He was going to be my next selection after Lendl.
I know that a lot of people kind of out there in the tennis world kind of get balked by the fact that Bjorn Borg isn't like in the discussion for the greatest player in the world as much as the likes of Federer and Djokovic and Nadal at the moment. Is that a view that you kind of subscribe to, Rob, or not?
I don't know. I actually haven't picked Bjorn Borg in my team, which I know is kind
you
of
two are going to start fighting in a minute.
Kind sorry. Of a sacrilegious thing to say, and it wasn't because it wasn't because it hadn't crossed my mind. Of course it has. And obviously, you know, he is team captain for Europe in the actual Labour Cup as well. I'd want to suggest a a left field choice and my one pick for a non-open era player. And this is purely on top of the list for most Davis Cup rubbers ever won. At 120 was Nicola Pietrangeli, and 78 of those in singles. So I think just from a stats, appealing to the data heads here, from a stats point of view, this guy's won the most Davis Cup rubbers. What do you think of that, Damien?
Well, as I said, I mean, we don't really have much footage of him, but I certainly, of course, heard of the guy. One of the courts in Rome is named after him. I'm not too convinced he would do well on indoor surfaces, though. Like, I think he only won the French Open, right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
I see he also never won the Davis Cup, actually. I'm not sure who were the other players in his era from Italy.
Well, this is where stats fall down, isn't it? Lies, damn lies, and statistics. I'm more than happy to swap Borg for Pietrangeli. Okay. It was a left field choice that I actually wanted to
give you, you know, some sort of a compromise and say that we're taking Glendl, and then you have the pick for the next player. Because I'm way more into Lendl than Borg here.
Hold on a minute. I can't, just hold on.
Okay.
I know that I'm only the host here, and I don't necessarily have a say, but I'm also European, and I feel like if Bjorn Borg isn't selected for this team, then my mum will have a fit. Okay.
Yeah. I'm gonna, at the risk of giving Andy's mum a fit, I'm gonna, if you're saying Lendl's a must-have, then I'm saying Murray's a must-have, and then that's our
okay.
That's fine. Okay. We'll talk. Can we talk about Andy Murray in relation to the sixth pick? Can I just have some sense? I don't want to cross too many streams here in a Ghostbusters reference, but Amy, have you heard this European discussion that's been going on here?
Yeah, I have. I also heard the thing about Nadal, and I was like, wow, if they were almost not going to pick Nadal and they were almost not going to pick Borg, I think World may beat them in this.
Right, let's get some. So having Lendl, are we having Borg as fifth, or are we going for Andy Murray as fifth?
No, let's go for Murray. Let's stick to our guns.
Okay, Andy Murray. I mean, obviously I'm going to go along with that, but right, Andy Murray.
Maybe your mother will forgive us because there's Murray.
Well, yeah, she does love Andy Murray. Anyway, that's enough mum talk on one podcast. She'll be getting a big head. She's like my number one. She's the number one fan of this podcast. Let's go back to the rest of the world then. Like Amy, you mentioned that the rest of the world might beat this team if they're not going to pick Borg, and they haven't picked him so far. So. Okay. What do you think of the depth in your side? Is it lacking compared to the European side?
I mean, it's interesting to me that Ryan had his picks and then he has like this whole other sort of backup pool, because to me, the top nine were very easy and then there was a cutoff and it was like, wow, this is easy. I just filled it right out. Do you want to hear my next or is that...
I would love to hear who you've got kind of like jostling for those top couple of positions. Obviously, you had Roy Emerson in your top three. So who else? And you had Laver. So we know kind of four of your six. So let's just see who your kind of five and six were.
Okay. Agassi and Connors were my next two.
Yeah, go ahead.
Both with eight Grand Slams. Agassi with the career slams. You know, won them all once, at least once. Team player, a guy who would not quit ever. I don't care if he was on his last leg. Entertaining. You know, the crowd loves him. You know, he almost made my top three locks. And then the same for Connors. He didn't play in the same era as Agassi. But the longevity,
the... He tried to, though, didn't he? He went that long.
Yeah. ability to... the all-court game, you know, the ability to come back when the chips are down. So those were my next two.
Ryan?
So actually, those were my next two as well, which I think speaks to what Amy was saying, where the depth may not be there if they were, say, a dozen players. But I think picking a top six, it is similar. Yeah, I had Agassi. I mean, Agassi and Connors both had 17 Masters. I think when Connors played, it was the Grand Prix series. But Masters equivalent titles, which were tied for second in the rest of the world behind McEnroe. So both of them, obviously, 8 Grand Slams. Connors was one of only 3 players, along with 3 rest of the world players, along with Laver and McEnroe, with an 80% win percentage. So just that consistency of solid play over time, I think you had to include the two of them. And then Agassi also has a 3 Davis Cups, and he did win an Olympic gold, which I think I did take playing for your country in it somewhat, thinking of if it does have a prestige of, say, a Ryder Cup, because even though the European team, the Ryder Cup isn't playing for a single country, just watching that event, they really do seem to have that pride level on the golf side. So I think Agassi's just career, he's an absolute must, and then Connors as well for really the exact same reasons Amy said. Those were my 4 and 5 as well.
So let me just pick you up on something here. We've got, so far, 5 picks. It seems that, if I'm reading into this correctly, that you're both going to go for kind of Agassi and Connors in this slot, then that leaves us with 4 Americans and 1 Australian. Someone called out a bit of a British bias earlier. Am I within my rights to call out a US bias?
Yes.
I think that is fair, but really looking, aside from Australia, there weren't, I mean, you have a Guillermo Vilas, and I actually briefly considered putting in kind of as an alternate Gustavo Kuerten, just if the event were held on a clay court 1 year, I think he deserved a nod. But just looking back, really from 2005 prior, the rest of the world is really strong. I mean, the 80s was dominated by Americans, and you had Sampras, Agassi. I think there is some bias, but I think I tried my best to be away from that. And I just think there are, like, Americans did dominate that side of tennis besides the Aussies, were the really only other country that stood out.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about kind of the lack of kind of rest of the world representation when it comes to try and get that 6th player. But the only other thing that I just want to point out at this point, Amy, is that you've got McEnroe and Connors in the same team. Is that going to cause any issues?
You know, knowing that Laver Cup is an exhibition, no, I don't think so. I think it'll be one of those things where, you know, I actually covered the Laver Cup for Last Word on Tennis, the one that was in Chicago. And that was the one that Novak was at. And, you know, there's always been this undercurrent about Federer and Djokovic, is there this, you know, rivalry, and they were on the court together and they played doubles together, and it was great. I don't know if people remember, but Novak actually hit Roger when they were playing doubles in the back of the head.
I think it was the lower back, actually, wasn't it?
So vein where rivals can, you know, be on the same court, I think McEnroe and Connors could certainly play together in this event.
Cool, right. So that's 5 on 5 we've got so far. We need a 6th for both sides. We've let the European side settle down over the last couple of minutes, so let's see what craziness we're going to get now. We've got a team of Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Lendl and Murray. We've not got the likes of Bjorn Borg, we've not got Mats Wilander, we've not got Stefan Edberg. An anti-Swedish bias, as some would say, is starting to develop here. Stan Wawrinka's not there. We've got, you know, a load of other European players who haven't quite made the conversation yet. So let's kind of open it up. Let's start with Rob and see what ridiculousness is going to come now.
Quickly, I want to mention Gustavo Kuerten when he won the ATP finals in Lisbon in 2000.
Of course you want to mention Gustavo Kuerten.
Was one of the most exciting ATP finals ever. Probably the... Anyway, that's neither here nor there. If we're addressing an anti-Swedish bias, can I offer up Jonas Björkman as the... the European player in the Open era with the most Grand Slam doubles titles, with 9. So he's our doubles specialist. One-time coach of Andy Murray, so the two of them playing doubles together is something that I would be quite intrigued to watch. And also, not a bad singles player either. You know, he did win a couple of indoor hardcourt titles. I think if we're looking for a double specialist, he is our guy, if that is what we want from our sixth player.
Damien, you want to jump straight in with that?
Yeah, with the big four and Lendl, we are kind of lacking a double specialist. I thought about Borg and Becker, fighting for the sixth spot. Becker has a fantastic indoor record, but neither of them... are really, have really had any success in doubles. Well, the big four, Lendl. So I'm actually kind of willing to go with Jonas Björkman. I think, the Swedes are going to be happy because at least we have one. And honestly,
Are they going to be happy with Jonas Björkman being picked over Björn Borg?
No, at least it's a Swede, right? I mean, if we can't throw maybe Mikael Immer here, but Jonas Björkman is fine, I think.
Well, Damien, you mentioned Boris Becker, and he was my sixth pick for entertainment value, and obviously his indoor record, incredible. And then also, so my six would have all represented different nations as well.
Yeah, I also had Becker as my sixth one, but I am kind of seeing, the fact that we don't have a double specialist, so I'm going to go with Jonas Björkman too. Let's go.
Yeah, and a similar game to Becker as well.
Yeah, and he was also very entertaining, so I think he has all the ticks covered, so yeah. Let's go with that. It's going to be a bit, at least, an interesting pick because we kind of had the big four and that might be a bit bland and boring for the listeners. So Jonas Björkman for a crazy pick of ours.
Without trying to give away any of the answers to the quiz that's going to come up, but there's a particular American player who's done exceptionally well in Laver Cup.
I think I got it. His name came to mind.
Yeah, and
in all three of them.
Yeah, exactly. And he's not exactly a double specialist himself, having been an ATP Finals singles player. But to throw in a double specialist might be a good way of going, because that is still makes up a decent number of the points. And like you say, him and Murray's an excellent doubles player. Nadal's a very good doubles player, but you were probably a little bit short on doubles players, so interesting. And I'm happy to kind of obviously sign off on that now. So the European six were Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, Ivan Lendl, Andy Murray, who didn't really get that much of a discussion about, but I'm happy to see him there, and then Jonas Björkman. So let's move it back over to the rest of the world. Who have we got in the six? We've not talked about Ken Rosewall. We've got Roy Emerson, who's still sitting outside, having been a lock for Amy. And John Newcomb, another Aussie. And then we've not got any kind of more modern players. Let's pick up with Ryan, please. Who do you really want in that sixth spot?
So I kind of have it down to four players, and you mentioned the more recent era, and I wanted to mix eras because you have McEnroe and Connor from that era, Sampras and Agassi from theirs, and obviously Laver from back. And there were two guys. Obviously, the guy you were talking about is Jack Sock, who didn't make an ATP Finals, but obviously his singles career went way off the last year, and injuries were part of that, but he is an excellent doubles player. As I think a couple of grand, I know he won that Wimbledon with Pospisil. I didn't feel like he should be. I felt, but I was between Sock and Nick Kyrgios for if I had
to ever get a mention.
Yeah. And Kirio's the entertainment value is obviously there, both with his personality and his trick shots. Fun guy to watch. He's a pretty good doubles player. And mentally, I feel like this is probably the best thing for him as far as being comfortable, being enjoying being there. And on his day, he can really play with just about anyone. I mean, he's shown that with wins over the big three. And so I think he could if he really brought it. But I don't think he's worthy of inclusion for the team. Personally, I think it comes down to two Aussies, Roy Emerson, who we talked about, and Ken Rosewall.
Mm-hmm.
I favored Rosewall looking at, I mean, he does have, I think the most impressive thing of Rosewall is he has 8 Grand Slam titles. And because he turned pro at the time he did, he spent 12 seasons without being allowed to compete in Grand Slams and still won 8 Slams. And in those 12 years, they had the pro slams, the U.S. Pro, French Pro, and the Wembley Pro. He won 15 of those, which who knows the competition level. I mean, I can't really speak to where it was in that era, but it's an impressive accomplishment nonetheless. So I think I was leaning Rosewall, but I did not look enough, I'll admit this, into Emerson's accomplishments in doubles, winning, I don't know if you may, I think 12 or 13 slams, and then he also 12, okay, and on top of his 10 single slams, and I think he, eight Davis Cups, which granted that was a very strong Australian team as a whole. I would still kind of lean Rosewall because of what he accomplished with the prime of his career not being slams, but I would also be okay going with Roy Emerson. I don't know if you want to talk about who else you kind of debated with.
Well, first of all, I want to say that y'all are crazy for putting Jonas Bjorkman on your team when you've got Rolander, Edberg, and Borg sitting on the bench. I mean, the Swedes are going to be like, what are you doing? But, you know, it's interesting. Laver Cup, I don't think it's like Davis Cup in that they don't tend to put doubles specialists on this thing. They take the top players by ranking in the singles world. And, you know, the Americans or Team World, they have not put the Bryans on this team. You know what I mean?
Jack Sock last year, for example, he barely had
Wasn't Sock put on there because people got hurt or sick or something and he was available and he had done the previous two maybe? I'm not sure, but the circuit.
Kevin Anderson pulled out, but I believe Sock was already on the team at that point, but I may be
wrong. Okay.
And let's not forget, he actually won that match as well, and this is the only match he actually won all calendar year.
So. Yes, yes. But there may have been, you know, there may be like a special relationship, you know, with Sock and Federer and all that. But I think if this were a competition where they really wanted to go for doubles specialists, that you would see like the top European doubles specialists on the team. I think that's a Davis Cup thing. I don't think it's a Laver Cup thing. And actually, part of the thing that I find so entertaining about the Laver Cup is seeing single specialists in a doubles role. Like, I'll never forget when Federer and Nadal paired in doubles. And just, you know, seeing the interaction between these two guys who normally play singles. So I don't think in terms of double specialists for my team anyway, but it's one of those things where if you're really good at doubles like Emerson is, then it's like a bonus. So I would argue for Emerson. I mean, I have a soft spot for him. I've met him many times. I've talked to him many times. And I'll never forget, I once was talking to him for like an hour and I asked him, were you ever scared that you were going to lose a match? You know, were you ever in this pressure moment and you're like, oh, I'm scared this one's going to get away from me. And the guy has a great sense of humor, but in all seriousness and humility, he said no. And he had many comeback wins where he was just dead to rights and came back. So he's one of my favorite all-time players. So I would argue for him. The only other person that I really, well, I considered Newsom, but the only other person that I considered was Arthur Ashe, just because of who he is.
And that would lend some set, that would lend some grandeur to the team, undoubtedly. But Ryan, are you happy to go with Emerson?
I am. And I actually did think about Ashe. I think he would be, if we extended it out and said and had a team captain for the Cup, I think Ashe would be the perfect one. He's so well respected in the world. But yeah, going through, I think the argument for Emerson is very fair. And we don't, aside from McEnroe, like we don't have a ton of doubles players with a great resume. And so I'm very happy putting Emerson on the team as our sixth.
Great. I love our team. I love it.
Great. So I've got two things to say about this. Number one, I feel very sorry for Ken Rosewall. I think I feel sorry for him having researched this pod a little bit more than just for this. I think maybe his place in tennis history is maybe misjudged. Like you say, his record in the Pro Slams is... He was playing against like Rod Laver as well. If you look at the people who've won those Pro Slams, it's between Rosewall and Laver for the last 5 years, although, like you say, the depth of that competition we don't really know about too much. And also, you know, like you say, he's won 8 Grand Slams without having those years, which is incredible. But I can understand your arguments for all the players that you've picked. And the other thing that you mentioned about Arthur Ashe being a team captain, this is the good thing about the European selection, right, guys, is that Bjorn Borg can carry on in his role as team captain, yeah?
Absolutely, I'd have no problem with that.
I think he'd have a problem with not being selected himself. Right, so we've got our six then for both sides. Now let's just formalise that. Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, Ivan Lendl, Andy Murray, Jonas Björkman will play Pete Sampras, Rod Laver, John McEnroe, Andre Agassi, Jimmy Connors and Roy Emerson in this ultimate Laver Cup battle. The question is, Damien, who wins and what score?
You know, first I wanted to say, you know, my initial instinct was to say that we're going to destroy you. But I think it actually came out pretty evenly split. I would certainly love to see it. I think Jonas Björkman would be the deciding factor. He'd play all three doubles rubbers. You know, one with Murray, one with Federer, and one with, I don't know, Nadal maybe. Yeah, and I think they would definitely win all three.
I don't know. An Emerson McEnroe pairing, I think that would be a very formidable.
Yeah, that would be close. Yeah.
The question is, would Bjorkman have to play a singles match?
Yeah, I guess he has to play one.
Ah, that's a liability.
That's only one defeat though, and if you play him on the opening day, it's only 1 point as well.
Okay. Well, I think one of the issues the Laver Cup has. In terms of its competitiveness, like you said, it's been, you know, Europe have dominated, and actually, you know, a less obvious team from Europe against a all-out, all-star rest of the world side might redress that balance a bit, might make that a bit more competitive.
Hey, Amy, I presume you think the rest of the world team that you've selected would win?
Well, I mean, we've got the three goats, so that's, you know, and you've got Murray, too, and Lendl. I mean, that's tough to beat. But Ryan and I have a good chemistry here. I can already feel it, you know. We've got great team chemistry. We're spunky, and we're certainly going to be entertaining.
Yeah, undoubtedly so. Right, brilliant. I would definitely pay very good money to see this this Laver Cup lineup go into battle. Let's wrap things up with the quiz. We've kind of run over a little bit, but that's fine. It's been quality debate. Thank you all for that. Let's get these names rattled off. Let's go in. Oh, let's start with Rob, and then we'll go Rob, Ryan, Damien, Amy, and then we'll rotate that around until we get all nine. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So Rob, Ryan, Amy, and Damie. So Rob, you've got the easy job of starting us off with this.
Well, let's go with someone that we were reminded of during the course of this, and say Jack Sock.
Yeah, Jack Sock is the second highest point scorer in this short-lived Laver Cup history. Ryan.
I'll take the easy one. I'll go Federer to get it out of the way.
Fed is out of the way. Damien.
Alexander Zverev.
Alexander Zverev is correct. He is the fourth highest point scorer. 13 points he's earned so far. Amy?
I'll go with Kyrgios.
Kyrgios is fifth on the list. He has earned 7 points. Back to Rob.
John Isner's won loads, hasn't he, I think?
Certainly has. He's third on the list. So you've got the top five now. Isner's got 14 points, mainly in doubles. He's undefeated in doubles, actually. Ryan.
I'm not 100% sure on this, but is Dominic Thiem up there?
Just about. He's a ninth of nine. He's only won 2 points. So this is the reason for the nine, because only nine people have won more than 1 point. So, Damien.
Nadal has to have more than one.
He does. Nadal is sixth on the list with 6 points. Amy?
Oh, gosh.
It's getting tough now.
Djokovic.
Is.
Oh, no, he was 0-2, wasn't he? Hasn't won.
Yeah, 0-2.
Okay, gosh. Schwartzman?
Not Diego Schwartzman, unfortunately. He's 0-1.
Okay.
Going back to Rob.
I reckon Tsitsipas, did he do quite well in the last one?
He's won 1 point from... he's played 3 matches. So only 1 point for Stefanos Tsitsipas. Let's move to Ryan.
Tsitsipas was my guess. I know he's played in the last one, maybe the last two, so I'm going to guess Taylor Fritz.
Taylor Fritz is correct. Taylor Fritz has got 3 points. He only won one match, but he gained 3 points. And the last one, Damien, can you get the last one?
I think one of the matches that Djokovic lost was against Kevin Anderson, so he'd have to be there, I think.
Yes, Kevin Anderson's correct. So it goes Federer, Sock, Isner, Zverev, Kyrgios, Nadal, Anderson, Fritz, and Thiem. Obviously, with the points scoring, it can be a little bit difficult with it being difficult, different points on different game.
Do you know who's the worst? Like, who lost the most points?
We've got Sam Querrey, 0 from three matches, from 0 for 7 in terms of points.
Oh.
Thomas Berdych, 0 for 6. Raonic, 0 for 5. Shapovalov 0-3, same as Djokovic.
Querrey only played the first edition, right? So he kind of lost it there for the rest of the world.
Yeah,
half of the points.
Querrey and Berdych both only played one. So. Right, brill. I'd say that was pretty good on the quiz. We got 7 in a row there out of 9, and it was pretty tough. So thank you so much, all of you, for coming on. It's late in Europe, and it's kind of an awkward time in the States as well. So, and obviously with my faux pas with the timings, I'm glad we all managed to get together. So thank you.
Thank you. It was fun.
And I apologize to all Swedes on our behalf. And when
Jonas Bjerkman. They surely didn't expect this, right?
When I post these teams out on social media later, I'll be interested to see what the reaction might be. But thank you, everybody. And, you know, we're developing a decent back catalogue of these Last Word on Tennis podcasts now. So please check out the previous episodes if you like this one. And we're going to have these guys on a regular basis as well. So tune in for future ones and get onto the website, lastwordontennis.com. Check us out on Twitter, Last Word Tennis, and also on Facebook, Last Word on Tennis. Thank you very much. I've been Andy Watson, and this has been the Ultimate Labour Cup.